ignore it.
Another ping.
Fuck me!
He sits back on his heels and I almost cry out at the loss of him. Hair mussed, lips swollen. The ridiculous amount of sex appeal he exudes makes me dizzy. When the phone starts to ring, Dane frowns and gets up to grab it from the nightstand. He sees who's calling and picks it up.
What's up?
The V that pops up between his brows says something's up, and it isn't good.
Okay, I'm on my way.
Ending the call, he grabs his undershirt off the floor.
Missy went into labor and there seems to be some trouble.
Jumping off the bed, I push down my dress. I'm coming with you. 5 minutes later, we're walking into the barn. The frailty of life. We lose sight of it so easily. We go about our business day in and day out like there's only a slim chance it may all end, when in fact it's probably closer to 30-70. Every time I start to feel safe enough to let loose, something comes along to remind me how precarious it is. Missy has been in labor for 2 hours, and I swear every time the small mare groans and thrashes, I die a small death. 3 times Dane has asked me to leave and go back to the house. 3 times I've ignored him. He and Levi look exhausted from trying to keep her calm as we await the vet to arrive from treating a bunch of colicky horses that got into some bad hay. Or so I've been repeatedly told.
Where the fuck's the vet?
I whisper shout for the 4th time from outside the birthing stall. Levi wipes the sweat from his forehead with the sleeve of his shirt and takes his cell out from his back pocket. Missy makes a terrible, pained sound, and we all freeze. Looking at the screen of his cell, he says,
"On his way, but he's coming from 60 miles away. Conyers' outfit?"
Dane asks, and Levi nods.
"What do you think is wrong?"
I ask, both curious and scared of the answer. Dane and Levi exchange a look.
"Foal is a breech, and the cord may be wrapped around the neck."
My stomach sinks. I feel faint all of a sudden. Blood rushing in my ears, weak kneed, the stall door is the only thing keeping me up.
"You should go back to the house, Stella. You look pale."
Dane's head whips around, a scowl at the ready.
"That's it."
He steps out of the stall and grabs a small stool for me to sit on. I drop down in it. Sitting on his heels, Dane meets me eye to eye.
"You're worrying me,"
he says in a low, direct voice.
"Let me take you back to the house. You're no help here."
He's right. I'm getting in their way, and that's the last thing they need. With a heavy heart, I nod, and Dane wraps an arm around my back. A tall, lanky man wearing jeans and a silver handlebar mustache walks in holding a bag and a medical box.
"How's she doing?" "Not good,"
Dane answers, getting to his feet. Forgoing the greetings, the vet sets down his toolkit. A young woman comes running in with more equipment. They douse their arms and hands with what I assume is disinfectant and put on surgical gloves. Then the vet disappears into the stall, stethoscope hanging around his neck. Dane hauls me up and out of the barn while I complain the entire way back to the house.
"Don't fight me. I can't look after you and help them."
I nod, and he leaves me standing in the bedroom. Sometime around 2 a.m., he walks back in. I sit up right away, wait for him to speak, but he doesn't. He won't meet my eyes, and I'm too upset to ask. Shirt and pants soiled, he strips down to his underwear and walks into the bathroom. I hear water running. A moment later, he's back, pulling up the covers and sliding into bed.
"Dane."
Strained and small, I don't recognize my own voice. He takes my arm and pulls me against him. My back to his front, he holds me gently and buries his face in my neck.
"Foal didn't make it."
My entire body hurts, an unbearable pressure pushing on my voice box. The next sound I hear is a sharp squeal, broken and raw. Dane's hold tightens. It's me. I'm the one squealing. I'm the one crying hysterically for the little gray mare and the foal she lost. The next morning I wake up feeling like I got hit by a freight train, which then reversed over me. The bed is empty. Neither of us slept more than a few hours. Dane must be exhausted. He held me all night, brushed my hair back, dried my tears. I've never had a man do that for me. Didn't even know they were capable of it. I'm not cut out for this. All this emotion. It's overwhelming. I need to go home. Get back to New York. Where there aren't any cute animals I can get attached to. Sweet older men who regale me with stories that make me laugh. And handsome young men that make me swoon with their singing. Where I'm not on the verge of falling in love with the father of my child. I need to get back to reality. Desperate for coffee, even if it's only decaf, I throw on jeans and a hoodie and open the bedroom door to male voices in the kitchen.
I brought you up to take responsibility, Dane. Not run from it. That woman is crazy about you. She's carrying your child. You've got to do right by her. It's not that simple, Dad. I don't see why not. Things haven't changed that much since your mama and I met. When love finds you, you gotta go with it or you won't ever get peace again. Yeah, and look how that turned out.
Dane murmurs angrily.
I got two beautiful kids, a grandbaby, and two more on the way. I'd say I made out pretty dang good. Bringing that woman up isn't the right approach. She's not your mother, Dane. Don't you think I know that? Well then, I don't see why you won't ask her. You afraid she's gonna say no?
There's a heavy pause.
For starters, yeah. She's not the Marion type. That's partly why we started dating, seeing as we both agree on it. You gotta try for the sake of the baby. She may have changed her mind. All it takes is the right person, and that woman is the right one for you.
I want this conversation to end for all our sakes. The longer we stay here, the harder it's going to be when Bill discovers the truth. All I can do now is pray it doesn't do irreparable damage. I open and close the bedroom door again to alert them I'm coming. With a knot in my stomach, I step into the kitchen, and both men turn their attention on me, both looking stressed for entirely different reasons. Everything okay? I inquire.
Peachy,
Bill answers, his smile weighed down by the events of last night.
Carson's coming over,
he tells Dane.
Says he got an offer we can't refuse. He should be here in the next half hour.
Dane nods at his father and looks me over. His expression is pure concern.
How are you feeling?
I shrug. What is there to say? If I think about it, I'll start to cry again. In fact, the only feeling that's safe for me to dwell upon at the moment is the one telling me to go back to New York. Dane pours me a cup of coffee, splashes cream in it, and adds 2 spoons of sugar. I don't ask how he knows how I take my coffee.
Pardon me. I'm gonna go check on Missy,
Bill announces in a dull tone. How is she? I ask Dane after Bill leaves.
Better now. But it'll be a while before she's 100%.
I stare into my coffee and Dane walks around the kitchen island, takes the coffee out of my hand, placing it on the granite countertop, and hugs me. His big, warm hands run up and down my back. I instantly melt into him. I need to get back to New York, I say, the declaration muffled by his shirt.
Carson's here. Let's talk about it later.
He lets go of me and walks out the front door. I step closer to the enormous picture window and see a gleaming red metallic Range Rover parked in the driveway. Out of the driver's side, a tall, handsome man steps out. He looks to be in his early 60s, well-dressed, cosmopolitan. Out of the passenger side steps Brandy.
What I'm saying, Bill, is that I'm willing to pay top dollar. If Gilroy is offering X amount an acre, then you can tack on 10% from me. That's my offer.
I walk up slowly, hanging behind Dane. On my way to see Missy, I found the four of them standing outside the barn.
But you'll develop it instead of leaving it a working ranch,
Bill cuts in. I can tell by his expression he's not happy about it.
You're less than 50 miles from the university. It'd be stupid not to.
Mr. Carson's attention slides to me. He gives me a perfunctory smile and I return one.
Steve Carson,
he says, holding out a hand.
You must be Dane's girlfriend.
Oh no, Daddy, they ain't together. Oh shit.
Of course they are, Brandy. Stella and Dane are having a baby,
Bill says, quick to come to my defense. My pulse races and I start to sweat, because I know what's coming. I love this man, and I'm about to break his heart. It's practically written across the sky with curlicues. I step next to Dane and he throws his arm around me, his big paw hanging off my shoulder. Brandy sees it and her head cocks. Then, feigning all the innocence in the world, turns her attention onto Bill.
I think you may be mistaken, Mr. Wilder. Dane and Stella have a baby contract.
Dane's body turns to stone, every muscle braced. I can feel him shooting daggers at Brandy even though I don't dare glance up. In the meantime, Mr. Carson looks lost. He has no idea what's going on.
A contract,
Bill repeats, chuckling.
I don't know where you'd get an idea like that, sweetheart, but you're wrong. This meeting's over,
Dane growls.
We'll consider your proposal, Steve.
He tries to steer his father away, literally takes him by the shoulders and begins to guide him toward the house.
It's all over the entertainment news, Mr. Wilder. These two started a trend, it seems. Stella needed a baby daddy because she couldn't get a husband, and Dane offered. Her ex-boyfriend explained it all. It's a business arrangement. They share custody. Like I said, they ain't together.
Jeff. Double shit. With great trepidation, I glance at Bill. He's pale. Pale and heartbroken. I've never felt more awful in my entire life, sick to my stomach and weak. He focuses on his son, who's running his hands over his face in what is clearly a sign of frustration, and says,
Is this true? It's not what it sounds like.
I watch the light leave Bill, all the lively charm replaced by an empty, blank expression. And then the inevitable happens. His attention falls on me, and I die a thousand deaths. I've never before prayed for a sinkhole to swallow me up until this very minute.
We'll talk later, Steve,
Bill mumbles, and begins shuffling back to the house, his posture showing his age. With Bill out of earshot, Dane blasts all the fury he's tamped down at Brandy, who's basking in satisfaction as if she didn't just unleash hell. He leans in, finger pointing.
My father just had a heart attack,
he snarls. The smug slides off Brandy's face, and she inches closer to her father.
Now, son,
Carson interrupts.
Don't call me that,
he growls at Carson. His death glare swings back to Brandy.
And you...
His jaw locks, lips press into a tight, straight line. Quite a valiant effort to refrain from calling her a bitch.
You start this shit because you have a bone to pick with me over something that didn't happen over a decade ago?
I've never seen Dane mad. Not truly mad like this.
and I hope to never see it again. You can forget the deal,
he tells Carson.
Now get off my property!
He turns to leave, but not before he takes my hand and takes me with him. We might as well have hung a mourning wreath over the front door, the mood was so black. It wouldn't have been too far from the truth. Bill was certainly mourning. After Dane and I returned to the house, Dane disappeared into the office, where Bill had gone to lick his wounds and curse me to the heavens in all likelihood. I called Jeff, ready to rip him a new one. And I couldn't even do that. He thought he was defending my honor when the gossip rags started saying all kinds of nasty things about me and my motives. What a mess. I booked a flight home, gathered my things, and began packing. My mother had overnighted me some of my clothes in a small travel bag shortly after our unfortunate shopping trip to the department store. I was going to have to face Bill before I left, but I didn't know what to say. How do you apologize for something you acted on knowing it was wrong in the first place? An apology didn't seem enough.
What are you doing?
Dane's raspy question startles me. I glance over my shoulder and find him leaning against the doorframe, arms crossed, his demeanor one of uneasy curiosity. The Ride a Cowboy t-shirt in my hand gets stuffed into the travel bag.
Leaving. I've overstayed my welcome. Your father must hate me, and I don't blame him.
He doesn't hate you,
he argues, the volume of his voice dropping in sympathy.
I explained everything. If he's mad at anyone, it's me.
I'm not buying it. I hurt him, broke his trust. And I'm a big believer that trust takes forever to be repaired, and even then it will never be seamless again. I have to get back to my life, Dane. So do you.
You are my life,
he forces out. What? I must have misunderstood. I must have. Blinking at the clothes in my hand, I drop them and face him. He looks as surprised he said it as I am.
A part of it,
he corrects. I feel horrible, Dane. I knew this was going to blow up in our faces, and still I went along with it. I'm not cavalier like you. I can't brush it off as an unfortunate incident and move on. He's the only grandfather this child will know, and I will never be able to look that man in the eye again. I'm expecting some sort of apology, a sign that he understands why I'm so upset. What do I get instead? Nothing. Silence from the man that is never silent. He blinks back at me as if I haven't just implied he's callous and self-absorbed, which I did. Can you drive me to the airport, or do I need to get a cab?
I'll take you,
he answers, still blinking back at me. 20 minutes later, after I approach Bill in the office with my tail tucked between my legs to say goodbye and he hugs me back like nothing happened, like I didn't crush him, after I kiss Levi and hug Missy, I climb into Dane's truck. Not a word is spoken on the drive to the airport. I might as well be in New York already with all the distance between us. You can leave me here, I say, when we reach the curb.
No.
The only word he's spoken in 40 minutes, and it's one of my least favorite. He gets out and grabs my small bag, hand on my lower back as we head to security. Once there, he places my bag down and stuffs his hands into his pockets. He looks nervous. I have no clue why.
Stella.
Don't, I say quietly, stopping him from muddying the waters between us any more than they already are. It's for the best. This is a complicated situation, and sex would only complicate it more. Today was a wake-up call. His eyes narrow as he looks off. His jaw hardens. We dodged a bullet, I add. He gives me a subtle nod.
See you back in New York.
He doesn't look at me. He simply turns and leaves me standing there, watching his broad shoulders disappear into the crowded terminal. And he doesn't say goodbye. Chapter 23. Stella.
You look excited to be back.
Ira's dry amusement cuts through my troubled thoughts. My gaze moves from the window of my office to the man standing in the doorway, as impeccable as ever.
That bad?
He adds when I don't deny it. Monday, first day back at work, and I'm already feeling edgy and unsettled. Like I left the stove on or I forgot to turn the faucet off. It all seems wrong. I finally get what Tina was trying to explain. I don't belong here anymore. Somehow, in the time I've been growing attached to the new people in my life, I've outgrown this place. On the tarmac, as we were getting ready to take off, I looked out the small oval window, and it hit me. I was going to miss Oklahoma with its friendly people, big smiles, and clouds as far as the eye could see. It had gotten into my pores and somehow changed me, and I wasn't sure I wanted to go back to being the way I was. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Ira walks in and takes a seat opposite me.
I'll tell you what my father told me a million years ago when I broke up with Esther because I wasn't done having fun. Grass is greener on the other side and all that bullshit.
He said. Ira coughs and clears his throat, eyes suspiciously damp.
Don't be seduced by the future. She doesn't exist. Otherwise, you'll miss out on what's in front of you. You'll miss out on the best things in life.
Ira looks off, out the window at the city skyline, and I know he's thinking of his son. Of all the years he wasted working too hard and spending too little time with his family. That's beautiful. But I don't see how that pertains to me. His attention pivots back to me. He blinks and gives me a cynical smile.
Stell,
he says with an expression that says I must be an idiot.
Stop trying to anticipate disaster and start living.
The doorbell rings repeatedly. I abruptly sit up in bed and check my phone. It reads a little past midnight. There's no guessing who it could be at this hour. A cold October storm rages outside. The pouring rain is a drumbeat against my windows, a dramatic soundtrack for the drama about to unfold inside. As the doorbell continues to ring, I get out of bed and slip on a hoodie, open the front door to find Dane standing there soaking wet and shivering. His long-sleeved t-shirt clings to every cut muscle of his chest and abdomen, nipples tight. The weight of the water dragging down his jeans exposes the V of his pelvis, which only serves to make him look like sex on steroids. He rakes his wet hair back and palms his face, wiping off the water dripping down his nose, expression all grim purpose. While we stare at each other, my neighbor across the hall, an elderly widow I've never spoken to, opens her front door and, catching sight of the dripping wet giant, immediately slams it shut.
I don't give a fuck that it's complicated.
You're scaring the neighbors.
I don't fucking think it's for the best.
He continues as if he didn't hear me.
I don't give a fuck about your neighbors. I don't give a fuck about any of it. The only person whose opinion matters to me is yours.
His attention falls from my eyes to my lips, and a slow heat kindles below my waist. I give up. I give up trying to rationalize it. I give in to whatever this is. Burning need to touch him? Yes. Craving to have him inside me? Definitely. Consequences be damned. And there will be consequences. There's no doubt about that. I can't seem to stop wanting him, though. It's time to wave the white flag and surrender. Like Ira said, Start living without anticipating the worst. I don't want to miss out on what's standing in front of me anymore.
I want you.
He plainly states, his voice a drawn-out, slow rumble.
I want.
Are you going to stand there soaking the hallway carpet? Or are you going to come inside and kiss me? I say, cutting him off. The next instant he's on me. Big hands gripping my face, firm lips devouring mine. The front of my sweatshirt and pajamas get wet, and a shiver rocks my body. Dane picks me up, steps inside, and kicks the door shut in one effortlessly smooth motion. After that, we're a tangle of limbs moving across the darkened apartment. I wrap my legs around his waist, my hands clutch his neck. His hands span my ass, kneading and pressing me against a hard-on that could hammer nails. Even in cold, wet jeans, he's fully erect. I don't want to know if this is only sex for him. I don't want to know if he's not interested in more. I don't want to know anything that will have me second-guessing being with him tonight. God, kiss. I, kiss.
Missed you.
He murmurs against my lips, while he blindly carries me to the bedroom. We bump into the wall, slam against the doorframe. It's been 3 days. I giggle in between kisses.
You judging me, shorty?
Pulling back, I hold his face and admire the sweet smirk he's wearing, his lively eyes flashing. No, I answer with a headshake. I missed you just as much. Grappling with the hood, he yanks it back and pulls my sweatshirt off.
Doubt it,
he tells me. He grinds his hard on against me and I just about swoon.
I've been walking around like this for 3 months. 3 damn months, woman. I missed you more.
Woman? I don't know which deserves a raised eyebrow more, woman or 3 months. It must be hyperbole. It must be. He couldn't possibly be saying what I think he's saying. He nips my bottom lip and I slant my mouth, giving him what he wants. His skilled hands slip under my shirt, brush back and forth over my breasts, toying with my nipples, and all else is lost, swept away by the clamoring of my body's needs. After that, there's little talking. His warm hands push my wet pajama top off as we gracelessly stumble around my bedroom. I try to lift his wet shirt, but it's impossible, so he drops me on the bed and does the job himself.
Do you trust me?
There's a quaver in his voice, a chink in his confidence. In that moment, I wholeheartedly know I trust him. With my heart, with my body, with my child. I trust him without reserve.
I haven't been with anyone since I met you. You know I've been tested.
He was tested as a part of the IVF procedure. That's not what's running through my mind, however. Being clean is one thing. Being celibate is another. And with his sexual appetite, I feel the need to clarify. I get up on my elbows for a better view of his face. You haven't slept with anyone since we met. That's what you're saying.
That's not exactly right,
he says with a furrow of his brow. Those three little words shove my hopes and desires down 8 flights of stairs. Spoiler alert, they did not stick the landing. I'm crushed. I don't know why I held out hope that he hadn't had sex with anyone else. He's a grown man with needs. Completely normal needs. Still, the immature, possessive part of me is crushed.
What I meant to say was that I haven't looked at.
He bends over me, hands planted on either side of my prone body.
I haven't considered.
He shifts, crawling up on his knees.
I haven't dated, or wanted to date any woman since the moment you and your ugly glasses walked into my life, Shorty.
His lips hovering over mine, he smiles broadly. I run my fingers through his hair and stroke his face over the 2 days' worth of scruff.
And no, I haven't had sex with anyone either.
And just like that, I fall. This man, with the perpetual twinkle in his eyes and knowing smile, with his ability to make me smile when I least expect it, he's a goose-down comforter on a cold, rainy day, a tequila sunset, puppy kisses, and a fat bank account. He's found his way onto a short list of my favorite things. I reach down to remove his jeans, and he pushes my hands away. In a hurry, he stands, unbuttons half, and wrestles the rest off. I almost laugh at how desperate he is to be rid of them. His erection springs up and salutes me, ready for action once liberated. And it is a sight. I could devote an entire evening to staring at it. He's built to scale. Thick and long, it almost reaches his belly, the dark blonde hair around it neat. While I unabashedly stare, he kicks the jeans halfway across the room.
You stare any harder, baby, and the party will be over before it starts.
Hooking his fingers over the top of my pajama bottoms and underwear, they're discarded at once. I need to say something, I half shout. His lips quiver in amusement. Don't take it personally if I can't, come. Sometimes it's hard for me. Not always, but sometimes. When I'm... It's been a while. With another person, I mean.
I hear you, baby.
More quivering of his lips.
I won't take it personally.
I'm pretty sure it's followed by a low chuckle. While I push myself up the bed, Dane crawls over me.
And don't be nervous. I intend to worship you.
Dane.
Nope. I've waited too long for this. I'm gonna say what I wanna say.
His accent keeps getting thicker with every word spoken. He kisses my nipple, draws it into his mouth, and tugs with his lips and teeth. The pleasure so acute, I just about explode right then and there.
Worship every inch of skin, every part of you,
he mumbles. His hands roam over my breasts, my belly, between my legs. He strokes and pets until they fall open in silent gratitude.
I'm gonna make you feel so good, you won't want to get out of bed for a week.
He mutters against my hip bone on his way south. He kisses me between my legs, spreads me open, working me with his tongue and his hands. My body arching at the quickly building tension, aching for more. My fingers dig into his forearms while he keeps my legs pinned apart. One more hot stroke of his tongue, and I go off like a Catherine wheel.
God damn. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
His voice is rough, eyelids heavy with lust. Before I can come down from the stars, he grabs my thighs and pulls me to him, positioning himself between my legs. Up on his hands, looming over me, he grabs his shaft and rubs it back and forth against me. Then, staring into my eyes, he sinks in. For a moment, I have doubts whether this will feel as good to me as it will to him. Only for a moment, though. As soon as my body starts to give, the feel of him has me panting for more. I'm seconds from screaming for him to move. One flex of his hips, and my brain shuts down. After which I'm just a bundle of senses, registering the hardness and the heat, the thick slide, the drag of pleasure, the thrilling and maddening promise of more. In small increments, he rocks in deeper until our hip bones touch. He's gentle, controlled, his face tight from the effort he's exerting to be careful.
Except I don't want gentle and controlled. I want leather belts and rugged fun. I want what he promises every time we touch, every time he looks at me like he wants to tackle me to the ground and rip my clothes off. What happened to that guy?
I thrust my hips to meet his, but he pins me down with the smallest of effort. Then he kisses me, lowers himself onto his elbows, and kisses me tenderly. Lips on lips, his body blanketing mine, he pumps his hips slowly, every stroke measured and deliberate. I'm not made of glass. He stops moving and meets me eye to eye.
But the
I place a hand over his mouth, stopping him just in time. Don't say it. His half-moon eyes crinkle at the sides. Under my palm, I feel him smiling. Then his tongue darts out and licks between my fingers. Laughing, I lift my hand away and caress the face of the man I love. It's just you and me here. No one else. Give me everything you've got.
And you better make it good, Dane.
Don't hold back.
That's all the permission he needs. Gone is the tender lover, the doubt, the hesitation.
He hooks an arm under my bent knee and sinks even deeper. His hips thrust hard and steady, with conviction and skill. Sweat drips down his chest, in between the clefts of his six-pack. He leans closer.
I knew you'd feel like this,
he whispers.
So good. You're perfect.
Rocking in hard, shallow strokes, he grinds into me, igniting an orgasm so powerful it almost makes me cry. I come in rippling waves, and come, and come, and come. Drowning in pleasure, soul-singing pleasure that goes on and on and on. Before I can recover, he flips us over. I'm straddling his hips, looking down at him as he grips my ass and squeezes. I can barely hold up my head, I'm so sapped of energy. The fog of euphoria clears, and I'm suddenly conscious of what I must look like hanging over him. Dane lifts my chin to meet his intense gaze, intense and loving. So loving, it feeds my courage.
You're so beautiful, baby. You have no idea how beautiful you look riding me.
Even in bed, he's chatty. I can't help but snicker.
Are you laughing at me? 'Cause I have something to shut that pretty mouth up.
Grinning wickedly, he lifts his hips off the bed and I fall forward onto his chest and into his arms. A moment later, talking turns to kissing. One swift jack of his pelvis and he fills me. I won't deny it. It's a rush, having so much power and force beneath me, ready to do my bidding. His fingers span and press into my hips possessively, moving me exactly how he wants me. And I let him. I let him because he's so willing to give me everything I need. Abandon, respite from doubt, pleasure. Calf-cramping, toe-curling pleasure the likes of which I've never experienced before. His hips pick up speed, my hands positioned for leverage, one on the pillow, the other braced against the headboard lest he sends me flying into it. A few hard thrusts are all it takes for me to come again. His name on my lips and in my heart. His pelvis bucks hard enough to lift us both off the bed. Swearing loudly, he comes too. Exhausted, boneless, My head rests on his rising and falling chest. As I listen to his big heart thundering near my ear, I know I'm done for. One night is not going to be enough. Not when the history of sex has been rewritten. Because if there is one thing I know for certain, it's that nothing and no one will ever compare. Chapter 24. Stella.
You never talk about yourself.
With his index finger, he pushes the hair away from my eye, traces my cheekbone, and follows it to my lips. I bite it and he smiles crookedly. Leaning in, he kisses me, next to his finger, until I let go and kiss him back. After Dane suggested a dirty shower, we crawled back into bed. I'll let you fill in the blanks of what a dirty shower entails. New discoveries? I love sex in the shower. Dane doesn't like getting shampoo in his face, and I found muscles I didn't know I had. Without a doubt, I'm going to be paying for this sexcapade for weeks to come. There's not much to talk about, I whisper, hand tucked under my face, his inches from mine on the pillow. His hand lazily brushes over my back and up my arm, soothing me into submission. It makes me want to tell him everything. I spent most of my life studying and the rest making money. I can hear how defensive I sound, but it's a touchy subject, and Rome wasn't built in a day. You should have read the dossier, Wilder. I finish with a wry smirk.
I know you don't like dark chocolate and strawberries, Shorty. That's not what I'm talking about.
The seeds get stuck between my teeth. So you did read it. I turn onto my back and pull the sheet over my bare breasts.
I read your damn dossier, woman.
He gets up on an elbow, yanks the sheet down to my waist, and draws excruciatingly slow circles on my nipples. The argument I had ready dies a sudden death. I'm too busy enjoying what he's doing to me to think, let alone argue. What else would you like to know?
Who's your spirit animal?
I grin widely. That's easy. George R. R. Martin.
Me too.
He volleys back with a completely straight face. Meant to be, I snicker.
I think so.
His voice is so low I almost miss it. Almost. My amusement fades, taking my smile along with it.
What's your issue with money?
He says, sensing my need to retreat. We never had it. It was hard. There are questions in his eyes. There's also tenderness. His head dips, his lips almost on mine.
That can't be all,
he murmurs, before placing a soft kiss on them. As dull as they are, those memories are still uncomfortable. Our neighborhood wasn't exactly the safest. I was always worried about my mother coming home late at night from her second job at the supermarket. A cop was shot a block away, so I figured if a cop could get hurt, what chance did my mother have? Face marked with concern, he grips my hip and pulls me closer. I started to wait up for her, started following her around. One time when she was doing laundry in the basement of our building, I found her in the stairwell, pinned against the wall by the building manager. Dane's jaw hardens, his eyes flashing with bare violence. I was 11 years old, and I will never forget the look on my mother's face. It's the only time I ever saw her truly scared. That look scared me to death. The image burned into my memory with startling clarity. Castillo didn't look like Jabba the Hutt. He was attractive. I'm sure many women underestimated what a threat he was until it was too late. Abject fear isn't fearing for your own safety. It's fearing for the person you love most.
What happened?
When he saw me standing behind them, he growled something about not being late for the rent again. 2 months later, he was taken away in handcuffs. I have no idea why, but I can imagine. I never told Alex what I saw that day. I also never discussed it with my mother. My suspicion is that it wasn't the first time he had threatened her. I would watch reruns of The Cosby Show and marvel at how nice their lives were. I asked my mother why we couldn't buy a house, and she told me that houses were expensive. It took a lot of money to buy a house, that the people in the show were educated professionals, and if I wanted a house like that one day, I should get an education. So I did. I figured out pretty quickly that the only color that mattered was green. If you had it, you were safe. Without it, I shrug. It feels like an eternity later when Dane finally speaks.
I will always keep you safe. Even on the days you hate me and wish you never met me, I'll be here.
My fingers trace the dent in his chin, the scar where the hair is absent.
Do you believe me?
And then I nod. This is a man whose word means something, who keeps his promises and takes care of the people he cares about. My turn, I'm quick to say. Being the center of so much attention isn't something I enjoy.
Shoot.
What's with all the women? No judgment. But knowing you as I do now, I don't know. For a man with his reputation, his vow of celibacy was surprising. Understatement of the year.
First thing first, I love sex.
This gets a well-earned eye roll. Yeah, I know, Casanova.
But the rest is myth.
His expression flickers with mischief. What? At my shock, his eyebrows wiggle. So, the thousands of women?
Bullshit. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've had my share of fun and then some. But nothing like people talk about.
I don't understand.
It started in college, when Coach caught me with the dean's daughter in the team locker room.
Why do I sense a punchline coming?
The dean's daughter and two of her sorority sisters. Naked twister in the shower.
And there it is. We both laugh.
I'm no angel, baby.
His smile slowly dies, replaced with something serious and vulnerable.
I never pretended to be one. But I promise to never break your trust. I hope my word is enough for you.
His face tells me that my answer means something to him. Maybe even more than he wants it to. Do I care what he did before we met? And furthermore, what he did a decade ago? No. As long as he didn't deliberately hurt anyone, I don't. It is. I stroke his cheek and follow the line of his sharp jaw. You're a good man, Dane Wilder. You know that, don't you? His hazel eyes hold mine, a myriad of emotions hiding behind them.
As long as you think so.
And then he kisses me, until I beg him for more. Our first ultrasound. I thought I was nervous, but Dane looks green. He didn't say a word to me on the car ride over. He did, however, manage to swear at every single yellow cab that zipped by us. Would you like to know the sex of the baby? The ultrasound technician queries.
No.
A singular male voice calls out. I turn away from the screen and meet his gaze with wonder. A soft smile on his face, he squeezes my hand.
As long as she's healthy, I'm happy.
She?
I think it's a girl.
He grumbles.
And I want to hang on to hope a little longer.
Smiling, I squeeze his hand back. I think it's a boy. The technician smirks and removes the wand.
Are you sure?
We'll wait, we say at the same time.
What are you doing?
I want to see how the crib looks against this wall.
I see that,
Dane drawls. In keeping with the surprise portion of this baby-making scheme, as somebody once called it, we decided on beige, ivory, and sage green for the baby's room in his townhouse. You can't get more gender-neutral than that. My stuff has been slowly and deliberately finding its way into his walk-in closet, and I had nothing to do with it. It went something like this. What are you up to? I inquired. Arms loaded with my suits, innocent expression in place, he replied.
You could leave for work from my place.
I thought we agreed no sleepovers.
Fine.
He shrugged nonchalantly, and I became immediately suspicious. Dane never capitulates that quickly, and I suspect wouldn't even at gunpoint.
You want to drive back and forth, spit carbon emissions, and add to global warming? Kill all the animals in the North Pole? We could do that. Your call.
Needless to say, the no sleepover rule was broken that night, never to be brought up again. Since then, we've fallen into a routine of sorts, a comfortable one, one that neither of us discusses. And the routine is that I pretty much live at his place. We did it for the polar bears. The father of my child is presently standing in the open doorway of the baby's room, dripping wet from a recent shower, with only a small towel to cover the goods. It's safe to say the sight of him mostly naked has not worn on me yet. He catches me staring and preens.
I don't want you lifting anything heavy. Why didn't you get the delivery guys to do it?
They did, I inform him as he walks over. I changed my mind 3 times. Dane steps behind me and brackets my arms, his hands resting outside of mine on the crib. What are you doing? I feel inclined to ask.
Helping.
He presses his hard dick into my butt, and I start to chuckle. That's not helping. He sneaks his hand into the front of my leggings and pushes from behind. That's the opposite of helping. I turn my head and he kisses me, takes possession of my mouth like he owns it, while his fingers work me up into a state of sensual madness. Those skilled fingers waste no time parting and stroking me until my body responds, rocking from another all-encompassing O. Then he kisses me through the last ebbing wave of bliss. One at a time, he's stripped me of every inhibition. The last month has been one sexual fantasy after another.
I'm getting quite the education.
There is something to be said about a man with experience. Sated, I push him down into the rocking chair. His wide eyes darken with the hope of what's to come. Legs spread apart, his towel falls open to reveal an erection that nearly reaches the cut muscles on his abdomen.
In the baby's room?
His expression can only be described as cautious with a side of bring it on. I didn't take you for a prude, Wilder. Dropping to my knees in between his legs, I run my hands up his thighs. He sucks in a breath and licks his lips.
Is nothing sacred to you, woman?
I have to bite my lip to stop from laughing.
Shush, I have work to do.
He doesn't utter another word for a good long time. I may be onto something.
Dane. Is that the doorbell? Stella picks up her head and mumbles, "Ignore it." The little vixen. Thanks to her, I won't ever be able to sit in that rocking chair and hold my daughter without thinking about her mother sucking me dry. Or the crib where I took her from behind. Or the carpeted floor where she rode me and where we still are. I've never been happier in my whole damn life, Super Bowls included. And that there says it all. When I think back on them now, something was amiss, and it was Stella. If only she could have been there to celebrate them with me. The doorbell rings again. I look down at the naked woman lying on top of me and pet her hair. I could watch this channel all day, every day, and never grow bored. Baby, get dressed. Someone's at the door.
Who shows up unannounced in the middle of the night?
I chuckle. It's only 8:30. After sex, all she wants to do is eat and sleep. Knowing it will take her a while, I slip on my sweatpants and go downstairs and open the door to find my father standing there.
My word, are you deaf? I've been ringing for half an hour.
Dad, what are you doing here? I step aside with a pleased smile and he walks in. Pops has only been here a handful of times in the last decade, so you can imagine my surprise.
Came for a visit. What does it look like? I don't know how you got through school sometimes.
Stella appears on the staircase in nothing but one of my t-shirts, and although it's long enough to hit her knees, her hair is a recently fucked mess while her lips are bruised red from, well, you know. We were doing laundry. Best I can do on short notice. Pop smiles crookedly, his blue eyes going from me to Stella, who's turning beet red.
That's what you kids are calling it these days?
Stella comes flying down the steps and throws her arms around my pops, and he hugs her back.
It's so good to see you, Bill.
You too, sweetheart. You too.
Stella.
Where are we going?
Bill asks while we sit around the kitchen table having coffee and waiting for my mother to arrive. When I told her Bill was here and we were going to Brooklyn, she insisted on joining us.
To the rec center in Brooklyn. They're delivering some important stuff today and I need to check on it.
His son answers. How's Missy? I ask Bill with a heavy heart.
Missing you, sweetheart. You'll come to see her soon?
I would love to. Bill, I can't apologize enough.
Now. Enough of that. It's in the past.
He winks at me and I know he means it. The doorbell rings and Dane gets up to answer. As soon as my mother walks into the room, Bill shoots to his feet and finger combs his hair back. My mother is strangely still as they stare at each other. Mummy, this is Dane's...
William Wilder.
The man in question moves forward with an outstretched hand.
William?
Brow furrowed, Dane's gaze cuts to me and I shrug. 20 minutes later, we all step inside the rec center, the three of us oohing and aahing while Dane, full of excitement, gives us a tour. The main room is filled with comfortable couches and tables, two computers, and access to the internet. After that, Dane ushers us to the indoor basketball court, which I'm sure will get plenty of use in the winter. Next comes the plot where a garden will be planted in the summer, and the all-weather tennis court. Looking around, I'm swamped with emotion. Awe for the incredible things this man keeps accomplishing. Wonder for his humility. Love, because he and his great big heart deserve it. A bit of envy, because he has seamlessly transitioned from a career he excelled at to something even better, helping people. And pride. So much pride, because in my heart, I want to believe he's mine.
I can hear you thinking,
he whispers in my ear. You amaze me. He blinks back at me, surprise flashing on his beloved face. I can't believe what you've accomplished here. It's amazing. I awoke at dawn with a feeling of dread, even on a Sunday. I thought it was a phase. That is, I was hoping it was a phase. But it's not going away. Time to admit that the speed my job demands is not something I can sustain anymore. I've lost the taste for it, and with it, the edge necessary to do it well. You know how I've been saying that work isn't fun anymore?
Yeah?
He says, suddenly alert. What if I started a nonprofit? I could help low-income families with their finances.
Thinking on my feet, it comes to me out of order. Everything from applying for grants, finding scholarships for kids, tax breaks, and government programs they may not be aware they qualify for. Many of them don't have internet access, and professional advice is expensive. There's so much I could do. In my excitement, I'm talking a mile a minute, while Dane calmly stares back. Did you catch any of it?
I think it's perfect,
he says, smiling.
You should do it.
Grabbing the collar of his jacket, I yank him down to my altitude and plant a big kiss on his lips. You're perfect. Still no L word, not even in the throes of passion. I don't let it discourage me, though. I can see he loves me. It's in the way he watches me when I'm working around the house, in the way he touches me, in the way he pays attention to every little detail. Even if he hasn't realized it yet, I have. I'm not naive enough to think it's enough to carry us into forever, but I'm not going to spoil what we have now by worrying over how it will end. Is she your girlfriend? A boy asks. I look down. He's no older than 12, a little overweight, with big brown eyes and dimples. Cuter than cute.
Angel, my man. About time you showed up,
Dane says, and fist bumps the kid.
Well, what do you think? I wanted to run it by you first.
Dane swings an arm in the direction of a bunch of game tables. Angel's already big eyes get even bigger. Oh, man, he says, hustling over to the tables. New friend? I ask the man I love.
He gives me advice on how to handle women.
With a side eye, his mouth curves into a cocky smile that tells me there's more to this story. Advice? Angel comes running over. Oh man, it's awesome! When can I play?
Rec Center opens in 2 weeks. You need to be patient,
Dane tells him with a sweet smile. Angel's gaze falls on my belly bump. Expression turns quizzical.
Are you having a baby?
I give the bump a pat.
I sure am. Are you married?
Wow. Okay, this kid is very direct. No, Angel, I'm not.
It's okay. My mom says that not all fathers want to be married.
A pink elephant walked into the room. Or a unicorn, or a purple gorilla, or anything that would make everyone freeze and proceed cautiously. I steal a glance at Dane and find his expression wiped clean. Not a hint of what is running through his head. Right, that is correct, I mumble awkwardly.
Maybe Dane will marry you.
And then Angel looks at Dane, whose discomfort is now out in plain sight and so obvious it can be seen from outer space. They say things happen for a reason. Good thing I wasn't harboring any delusions of a fairy tale ending for us. I never have to wonder how he feels about marrying me. His expression says he'd rather have his balls waxed.
Why don't we give the foosball table a try?
Dane tells Angel. Taking the boy by the shoulders, they do just that. Chapter 25. Stella. Thanksgiving came and went. We had it at the townhouse. My brother made it home, and Levi traveled to New York for the very first time. Everybody came with the exception of Dane's sister, who couldn't fly so close to her due date. Dane was as excited about it as a kid at Disneyland. It made sense once he told me he never had a traditional Thanksgiving, that he'd always been busy with games, team meetings, or film study. Quietly, without too much fanfare, our lives had seamlessly woven together. Things were good. Almost too good. When were you going to tell me? Tina asks, as soon as I answer my cell phone, skipping right over the pleasantries. When the baby graduated from college? I'm a coward. I fully admit it. For months, I've been mulling over how to tell her and kept coming up empty. It takes me a minute to answer. I'm so sorry. I tried to call you 1,000 times, I really did. But I didn't know what to say.
Jesus, Stell. You're my family. I love you more than Will.